It's 10:06. Good morning. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn today. And we hope that Kathleen will be able to be back on Monday. Well, it was the Great Depression, the so-called Dirty Thirties. Farmland was disappearing, topsoil was blowing in the wind, formerly prosperous farms were being foreclosed on by banks. Men who had prided themselves on being able to provide for their families and be successful were finding that they had to take handouts. It was not a good time. Along comes Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the New Deal, which included a lot of public works projects and a number of resettlement and colonization projects, one of which was in Alaska, in the Matanuska Valley. And that is the subject of a new documentary called Alaska Far Away, The New Deal Pioneers of the Matanuska Colony. And we are privileged this morning to have with us the filmmaker responsible for this documentary, Joni Juster, and also a son of the original colonist, Wayne Bowens. And they both join us by telephone, and you can too. Before we say hello to our guests, let me give the phone numbers of people who would for people who'd like to call in and be part of this discussion this morning. 800-486-8655. That's a toll-free number. 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, please use our local number, 227-2050, 227-2050. You can also send us an email. Here's the address, talk@wpr.org. All right. Let me say hello first to Joni Juster, our filmmaker today. Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, John, and thanks for having me.
And Wayne Bowens, who's also joining us by phone. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning, John. And Joni, this is Wayne Bowens in Palmer, Alaska. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thanks for being part of this. It's a real privilege to be able to speak with both of you this morning. To you, Joni, I'll get the obvious question out of the way first, and then we may be able to move on to other things. Where in the world did you come up with the idea to do a documentary about Matanuska colony in Palmer, Alaska?
Well, we didn't come up with the idea. The idea came directly to us. My friend Paul Hill, my friend who is also my co-producer, co-director, he and I live in San Francisco. And back in 1994, we both needed a break from our jobs and said, let's take a holiday. Where can we go for free? Well, we had free airline tickets, and we said, who can we go stay with? And we had our friend Jim Fox, who lived in a little town called Palmer, Alaska. And since I'd never seen real snow, I said, let's go to Alaska. It's February. So we went to visit Jim in Palmer. And it turned out that Jim was living with his grandmother, who was living in a little house built for her by the government in 1935 as part of this colonization project. Now, Jim had told us about the Matanuska colony before, but it hadn't really sunk in until we stayed with this nice lady for 3 days and heard her stories. And we became completely fascinated by the story of the colony, both as in human terms and also in political terms. What an interesting thing for the government to do, to just up and send 200-some-odd families from the Midwest all the way to Alaska to try to help them get off relief and help them get a fresh start in life. Well, at the end of 3 days, we looked at each other and said, why don't we make a movie out of this? Yeah, it can't be that hard. It should only take a year or so. We can figure out how to do this. Well, 14 years later, we're finally debuting Alaska Far Away.
And you're debuting it at the Wisconsin Film Festival.
Well, this will be the Wisconsin debut. We showed the film for the first time last June in Palmer to an audience full of colony families. That was our first audience for the film.
And how did they respond to it?
Oh, my goodness. We couldn't have asked for a better reception. Remember that for them, this is not only a documentary and it's not only history, it's also family movies. So for them, it's seeing their lives and their parents' lives and their grandparents' lives up there on the screen. And they've been waiting a very long time, very patiently and very supportively for this film, and they couldn't have been more supportive. It was a wonderful experience.
Wayne, I want to talk to you for just a moment. You were how old were you when your family embarked on this odyssey to Alaska?
I was 5 years old when we left Wisconsin. And we came out of Rylander, Wisconsin, and I guess we were privileged and to be the largest family that came up. And evidently they were looking for maybe smaller families, but we have we had 11 children in our family. And how Dad talked Mother into it, I don't quite understand yet, but it was good for our family. Dad was struggling, holding down 3 or 4 jobs out there, and it was an opportunity to make a better life, and it turned out really good for our family.
But you, as a 5 year old, what was that like when you first got there? You had to live in tents for almost a year, didn't you?
Not quite a year. We moved into our tents. We got here on the first group arrived on the 10th of May in Palmer, and the second group arrived on the 23rd of May, and we lived in tents from May, and pretty much everybody got into their houses by late November, early December. And, of course, a lot of houses were a long way from being finished. We had no electricity. We had no running water. But at least it was a roof over our head, and we had lots of wood to burn to keep us warm. So it was for us children, especially the younger 5, 6, 7 year olds and down, it was a big play day. They took care of us. They fed us. They clothed us. We had all this open space to roam. It was good. The older children and the parents, it was a lot of hard work. They had to clear their land. It was timbered land. Most of it, some of it was, excuse me, some of it they bought up from the homesteaders that was here at the time. And then they had a little bit of cleared land on it, but most of it was timbered land, and they had to clear it and start building their houses. Some of the houses were frame houses. A lot of the houses were log houses. They cut the logs off the 40-acre parcel that they got and took it to a sawmill that they brought in and cut sawed logs. It was lots of hard work.
Joni, when you were making this documentary, what was the biggest challenge you had to face? I'm going to assume that funding is always a big challenge for someone who's trying to make a film, but let's leave that obvious one aside. What were some of the challenges that we might not think of that you faced in putting this together?
Well, everything stems from the funding, because the next, of course, challenge is just the sheer logistics of gathering up the interviews and the archival materials and doing all the research, which was scattered all the way from Alaska to Washington, D.C. And we ended up doing interviews in 7 different states and research in several more. So considering that we both had to keep full-time day jobs in order to pay our rent while we're also trying to make the film and raise the funds for it, just trying to get around and get all that done was difficult. We interviewed as many of the original colonists as we possibly could. Sadly, there were a couple who slipped away, There's one who's still living in Kentucky, Minnie Olson, who unfortunately we never got to interview. And that's just the way it is. But the doing the research and the traveling and getting to talk to people, on one hand, I can call it the biggest challenge, but it was also the biggest reward by far, being able to talk to these people who not only did this grand adventure of taking off for a place that might as well have been the moon at that point, people who thought they would never get home to see their families again, people who were parents during the Depression, who were responsible for feeding their children during a time when life was so desperate for them, hearing their stories and hearing them firsthand and getting a chance to really talk to them in depth was a privilege for which I will be eternally grateful. The fact that these people opened their doors and their hearts and their lives to us was a great privilege.
Well, people of my age, and I'll just say I'm 54 years old, have parents who grew up in the Depression, I've heard a lot of stories about my father's farming family in northern Wisconsin and, mm-hmm. and what they went through. This was the cutover area, northern Michigan, northern Wisconsin, the northeastern corner of Minnesota.
Right.
This land wasn't very fertile in many respects and was full of stumps and rocks and everything else. It was hard land to make a living on. But what these families went through that made the move to Alaska was, to me, as I watched this documentary, I shook my head. I couldn't believe anybody would do it. But the conditions were so bad where they were, it must have seemed like a gift to some.
Absolutely. And so many of the people told us we had nothing left to lose back in the Midwest. Here was a chance for a new life. And what the heck, the government was putting so much effort and money and publicity into this project, they knew they weren't going to be allowed to starve up there. No matter
Let's talk
what,
about...
you know, life might be hard up there, but the government wasn't going to let them starve because there were cameras watching them every moment.
Well, let's talk about the publicity. This was front page news mm-hmm. all across the country, and there were huge crowds that turned out when the colonists arrived at one of the terminals that they had to go through in order to get to Alaska in the mm-hmm. first place, and they were treated like the modern analogy would be like rock stars.
They were celebrities, and you know, just try to imagine these were. Mostly people from small towns or farms, you know, in rural, isolated areas, and all of a sudden they're thrust into the national spotlight where they're on the newsreels every week, and the newsreels that were showing in the, you know, the local theaters in those days, that was as close as we get to, you know, today's internet. Everybody watched the newsreels, so they were on the front pages of the newspapers, they were in all the editorials. It was highly controversial. Half the country was calling them modern-day pioneers, and the other half was calling them cream puff pioneers. So there was, you know, everybody had an opinion, everybody was following this. It was like an ongoing saga. You know, it's often been said that, you know, when you think of the Shirley Temple movies or the Fred and Ginger movies of the 30s, it's often been said that the government had a part in those and having Hollywood create upbeat movies that would take people's minds off the Depression. We had definitely got the feeling as we were doing our research that the government had a stake in making sure that the Matanuska story was front page news, because here they had a group of hardy pioneers going off to build a new life in the wilderness. That was a great story to take people's minds off the Depression and give them the sense that, well, by golly, if they can pull themselves up by their bootstraps, maybe we can too. And consequently, thousands of people wrote to the government begging to be part of this colony.
And this wasn't the only resettlement project that FDR's administration had going. There were literally, were there like dozens of them across the country?
It was about 100 of them. They weren't all alike. There were several different types of them. Most of them relocated people within a small geographical range, so they weren't taking them far away from their original homes. Mostly it was moving people off of what they technically call submarginal farmland and moving them into new little model communities where they might give them a small piece of land, build them a nice little house, and they might build a small factory or some sort of business so that people could make a living as well. Most of these communities were relatively small. Matanuska was one of the largest, but what made it so newsworthy was sending them off to far off Alaska. These people were moved over 4,000 miles away from their homes.
Well, and at the time, I think watching your documentary, if I can remember this right, the population of Alaska was only 60,000.
That's correct. And that's in an area 2.5 times the size of Texas. You know, Anchorage, being the largest town at that time, was about 2,000 people, and I don't even think they had sidewalks at the time. Most of the population of Alaska, and the 60,000 was about half Native, about half white, and of the non-Native population, most of them were single men who had come up for the gold rush or come up for the fishing or what have you. They did not come up with families. It wasn't a settled area. So when the government was looking to settle Alaska and build up the resources and build a market for the railroad that had been built in the teens, they had been trying for a long time to attract people to come, families to come up and settle, but they weren't successful at getting people to settle one family at a time. So doing a colonization project, bringing up a group of people all at once and helping them by supporting them, building the infrastructure, making sure that they didn't starve while they got their farms up and running, that made sense. So the project really had its genesis, kind of a three-point project between the needs of Alaska to fill its area, the need of the Midwest to help these farmers who were starving in the cutover, and the overall relief efforts that were coming out of Washington. So it all just kind of came together with Matanuska.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll invite some callers to join our discussion as well. Let me give you the numbers so you can start calling right now. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's a local call for you, so please use 227-2050, 227-2050. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do that as well. Here's the address, talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. My guests this morning on this hour of the program, Joni Juster, filmmaker of Alaska Far Away, the New Deal pioneers of the Matanuska colony, and we also have with us Wayne Bowens, who is one of the original colonists. You can call in and ask them questions about the experience of making the documentary or perhaps the experience of growing up in this colony in Alaska. And I'll be asking Wayne about that when we come back. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 26 minutes after 10 o'clock on this Friday morning. Here's what's coming up later on the Ideas Network. At issue after 4, Ben Marins hosts Your Views on the News. You're invited to call in with your choice for the week's most significant news story. Your Views on the News on At Issue at 4 o'clock this afternoon here on the Ideas Network. This hour we're talking about a new documentary. Well, it's new to us, not to the people who made it. A 14-year gestation period. That's pretty good. We're talking about the documentary Alaska Far Away, the New Deal Pioneers of the Matanuska Colony. And we have Joni Juster, who is a filmmaker and one of the people responsible for this new movie documentary, and Wayne Bowens, who is one of the original Matanuska colonists. They both join us by phone, and you can too, at 800-486-8655 or 227-2050. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Perhaps you have a story of your own from the Depression that you'd like to share with us, and maybe you know somebody who left to go to Alaska to join the colonists. You could call up and tell us your story as well. Wayne, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions, if I might, about your life in the colony. You were 5 years old when your family left Rhinelander and made this 4,000-mile move. As you were growing up, what were some of the challenges that you faced growing up in this what we would consider remote wilderness of Alaska?
Well, one of the first things when we got here, it was very well planned out, and there was an architect from Washington, D.C. that laid out the new town of Palmer. When we got here, the main town was down at what they call Matanuska, and it was down in the lowlands, and it would flood every year when the Matanuska River, when the, the glacier would melt during the spring and summer, and the water would rise, and it would flood the little town of Matanuska. It was built on the railroad tracks. It had a little school and a couple of little stores and a hotel. But they decided, well, if we're going to move 200 families up here, maybe we ought to just design a whole new town. So they moved it up onto the highland about 6 miles north of Matanuska on the branch railroad railroad line that ran up to the coal mines north of Palmer. And so they built a school and a commissary and a feed store and a garage and a machine shop, and brought in water from a spring, a natural spring, about 6 miles north of Palmer. They put in a powerhouse to supply electricity and steam heat to these buildings that they built in Palmer. They built a dormitory for the teachers that was going to be coming in for the school. They built staff houses for the people that worked for this corporation that they set up to handle this whole project. And but one thing that they didn't build or put in the plan was a hospital. They had a pretty modern hospital in Anchorage, what they call the Alaska Railroad Hospital, and they figured that we could use that as our main medical hospital. They did send up a doctor, but he was a elderly, retired Army doctor. He never had dealt with children that much, and here we had 500 children along with this 200 families. And once these children all come in from the rural areas in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota, and all got together, they had an outbreak of measles. And, in fact, some of the, I think it was about 7 or 8 families were actually quarantined in Seattle when we came through Seattle, and they come up about 10 days later. And this Army doctor, he left in the first couple of 3 weeks, and then consequently we were without any medical doctor at all, and we had an outbreak of scarlet fever and pneumonia that resulted from this measles. And so it ended up we lost, I think it was 3 or 4 young, 5, 6, 7-year-old children in the first part of June. that was hard on a lot of the families, and some of the families decided maybe this ain't going to turn out such a good deal. So there was quite a few of them that left that first summer, but they did contact Washington D.C. and a lot of them through the efforts of Mrs. Roosevelt, they got a hospital approved and started construction on that. And one of the main things that really surprised me is how fast all this went together. And they built this school, which probably housed about 300 students from 1 to 12th grade back then. They built a gymnasium on it that first year. They was looking for to the social part of the program. So instead of just a gymnasium to go in and play basketball or whatever, they also put a movie projector up in the one end, and they had a big screen that came down on the stage on the other end. Underneath the stage, they had storage for chairs. Every Friday night, they would bring the chairs. Friday afternoon, they'd bring the chairs out, set up, and we'd had movies every Friday night. And, of course, we had limited transportation, so they brought in buses, school buses to bring the children in and to schools, and so they also used them buses to bring people into the movies, to bring them into church for the first few years. So it was a pretty well thought out program, and we had lots of accidents and medical problems in the first few years, and a lot of them they either had to come in to town with their horses or walk. We did a lot of walking to get into town and get our groceries, our medical supplies. Socially, we didn't think anything of walking 10 miles to visit friends and play for the day.
Joni, I want to make sure I don't miss this, because this is part of the point of why we're having this discussion today. When and where can people see this film, and when will it be available to the general public? I understand where you're showing it at the film festival in Madison, and where does it go after that? But where can people see it in the near future?
Oh, and I wish I had all the answers for you. Alaska Far Away we're still in the process of preparing it for general release, so it is not yet available. These are pre-release screenings that we're doing at film festivals as we're trying to drum up interest for distributors and such. Yes, it is showing tomorrow morning, Saturday the 5th, at the Wisconsin Film Festival here in Madison. Our understanding is that the advance tickets sold out immediately on the first day of ticket sales, which surprised and pleased us, although I understand that there are some tickets available at the door, and that's at an 11 o'clock screening.
And where is the festival being held?
The festival is being held at a number of theaters in Madison. Our screening is at the Bartell Theater on East Mifflin, I believe. And after that, the next screening that we have scheduled at the moment will be at the annual Colony Reunion in Palmer, Alaska, in June. And we've also been invited back to the Alaska State Fair in August. Now, we've applied to a number of other film festivals, and we're still waiting to hear whether we've been accepted into them or not. But we hope to have other screenings throughout the three Midwestern states that are most involved, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan, over the next few months. We want to get this out to as many people as possible. So if you own a theater or know somebody who owns one who'd like to show it, by golly, give us a call. We will have information on upcoming screenings on our website, www.alaskafaraway.com. And if you email us and ask to be put on our mailing list, we'll let you know about upcoming screenings.
Okay. Well, I wanted to make sure we had an emailer who asked us that question because they wanted to be able to see this documentary, and so now we've tried to answer that. Of the 200 original families, or 202, however many it ended up being, how many actually, Joni? How many actually stayed on permanently in Palmer?
Oh, and that's an interesting question. And Wayne, you can back me up on this because you may have the figures closer to the top of your head. I believe approximately half of them left within the first year or so. Is that right, Wayne?
Right, in the first 2 years.
Approximately half left. There are still a number of families in, not necessarily in Palmer, but in the South Central Alaska. Some of them moved out to Anchorage or thereabouts. There's still a number of colony families around there. A lot of the families left within the first year or two and went back to the Midwest. The part of the deal with the government was that the government knew they were moving people very far away from their homes. And since the project came together so quickly, there were just almost insurmountable logistical problems at the beginning when they were setting up the colony. I mean, remember that the colony was the colony project was approved by Congress on March 9th, 1935. Within a month and a half, the first families were en route to Alaska. And there's just, of course, there were going to be logistical problems. So what the government did was they promised the families that if they wanted to go back home, if they just said, Alaska isn't for me, and wanted to go back home, they would pay their way back if they left within the first year. So a number of families took advantage of that opportunity. So that was one of the reasons we came to Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan a few years ago. We wanted to interview the families that had left and find out what their experience was. We wanted to find out why they left, if they regretted leaving, what part this brief stay in Alaska played in the overall history of their families. And what we found was people left for a variety of reasons. There was illness, there was homesickness, there were family problems. Some of them just realized, oh my gosh, I was just put on 40 acres of heavily timbered land and I'm supposed to make a living as a farmer. I don't see when that will ever be possible, We connected with people who hadn't been asked about Matanuska in 60 years, and now they have come back into the fold and are now part of the colony family again and come to reunions. It's been wonderful connecting with these people.
Let's place the Matanuska Valley in terms of the geography of Alaska. I don't imagine that most of us carry a map of Alaska in our heads. So let's try and now I'm sure share that map with the rest of us on the radio. Try and give us an idea of where that is. It's east of Anchorage, but where is it?
It's a short drive from Anchorage. It's about a 45-minute drive on a very easy road outside of Anchorage. It's a stunningly beautiful valley surrounded by magnificent mountains. And like I said, it's a very easy drive, so it's in south-central Alaska. Most of the people I know who have been to Alaska have done the Inland Passage cruise. It's farther north than that. I personally have never seen the Inland Passage, so I keep going back to Palmer. But
okay.
The winters are milder than northern Wisconsin.
Well, there's a plus.
Wayne, what's the usual temperature in the winter?
Yeah.
It doesn't usually get much below zero, does it?
We did get 40, 50 below in the winter times. Not, sometimes it would last 3 or 4 days, maybe a week. But here, since about 1970, the weather has really changed, and we actually had a drought. I was farming. I had a dairy farm for about 16 years, and our average moisture was about 15 inches a year, and we've dropped down to 8 to 10 inches. The last few years, we'd be lucky to get a foot or so of snow. We've been without snow on the ground here now for a month and a half. It's been running about 35, 40 degrees during the daytime, and then dropping down around 20 at night. But
you do get those Matanuska howlers,
wind
coming off the glacier.
Winds, but even then, the last couple of years have not been as severe as they were years ago. And so we've had quite a change in the weather up here.
We have a call. We have some callers who want to join us, and let's get to one of those right now. We'll take a call from Ben in Verona. Ben, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning. Great show. I got in kind of the tail end, but I got up to Alaska in '79 in the Air Force, and spent my last 2 years up there, and then stayed up there for 13 years. But after I got out, I, you know, moved out to the Matanuska Valley, you know, for about 40 miles out of Anchorage, and bought a house on a little subdivision right on the Kinnick River there, just down from the Kinnick Glacier. And the way I understand it, he was my neighbor. He was one of the original colonists, and I think he'd sold a part of the original 40 acres, if not maybe he'd bought some more later on. But I think he might have been one of the original colonists' kids. Maybe Wayne can back me up. I think it's been a while. I've been in Wisconsin for 16 years now, but I think his name was Ken Lawyer.
Yeah,
Ken Lawyer is the original colonist.
Oh, okay, yeah. He was our neighbor. Real nice guy. Always would come over and help us out, and I used to see him all the time when I lived there. And there's a couple.
In fact, I got to meet him here at 9:30. I took over as manager of a local community cemetery when my dad passed away in 1970. He was an original organizer in setting up the cemetery back in 1936. And Ken Lawyer he digs our graves in the wintertime with his backhoe.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he had an excavating business going on. He wasn't really, if I remember right, he wasn't really farming anymore on a full-time basis, but I know he had backhoes, and, you know, he was coming and going. I think he actually did a lot of work on the subdivision right next door for the builder who put that in, but yeah, I loved it out there, and Matanuska Valley is just incredibly beautiful, beautiful place. It's one of the prettiest places in the United States, mm-hmm. and you know, the Talkeetnas are on one side mountain range, and then the Chugiak mountain range is on the other side, and you're just surrounded by gorgeous scenery everywhere you go. And what if anybody ever gets up to Alaska in August, at Alaska State Fair is something to take in. It's a lot of fun. You get to see all the vegetables that they can grow up there, like the 70-pound cabbages, and I know they've got a lot of potato farms that were started springing up when I lived up there too, and the potatoes are just incredibly good.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about a lot of good local homegrown flavor. But then I know, I remember, Wayne, I don't know if they still have the Point McKenzie Dairy Project that went on up there.
Yes, there's I think there's 3 farmers out there yet.
Oh, they're still out there. Okay, I used to go over there and cut wood when they were dozing up all the timber there. They dozed it up in these big rows and encouraged people to come out and cut wood. Because we had a wood stove in the house I lived in, and electricity at that time was pretty expensive. They didn't have gas out there, and so we burned a lot of wood. But that was kind of another neat project. Kind of seemed like it spun off of that colonist, you know, the original colonist kind of project, too. So
I
won't take any more time. I'll get off the air here. I'm sure there's a lot of other people wanting to call, but I just want to relate that story. It's a great show.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Bye-bye.
But thanks a lot for the call, Ben. Appreciate it. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more about this fascinating documentary about the Matanuska Colony in Alaska. The title of the documentary is Alaska Far Away, The New Deal Pioneers of the Matanuska Colony. And if you'd like to know more about the documentary, the website is alaskafaraway.com. We're talking with Joni Juster, the filmmaker, and Wayne Bowens, who's one of the original colonists. And you can, too. Here are the numbers, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, that's 227-2050. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10:49. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, next hour, it's Garden Talk with Larry Mueller. From lawns to landscapes and gardens to ornamental grasses, gardeners are impatient to get started this spring. And I'm one of them. After 11 on Garden Talk, Larry Mueller talks with Milwaukee gardening expert Melinda Myers about spring gardening activities. Well, here where I live, up in northern Wisconsin, we're still waiting for the snow to go away. And I'm sure that's the case in many places, but there's hope. This hour we're talking about a documentary that is just coming out called Alaska Far Away, The New Deal Pioneers of the Matanuska Colony. Our guests this hour, Joni Juster, a filmmaker and one of the people responsible for this film, and Wayne Bowens, who is one of the original colonists in of the Matanuska Colony. And we do have some callers who are on hold and want to join our broadcast. So let's go to Irene in Lake Mills.
Good morning.
Good morning, Irene. Thanks for calling.
I have a question about Dr. Albrecht. We were up there in 2001, and wherever we went and mentioned his name, he was very well known. He was recruited to serve the community when they were living in tents and experiencing the illnesses that your guest has talked about.
Well, Wayne, I think that one's for you. What can you tell us about Dr. Albrecht?
Okay. Dr. Albrecht had graduated from medical school earlier that in 1935. He was wanting to come to Alaska to be a Moravian missionary out in the bush area. And there was no openings at that time. And so he, the head of the Alaska Railroad Hospital, forget now what this doctor's name was, but anyway, he recruited him and he said, you know, if you would like to come to Alaska, we have an opening here at the Railroad Hospital in Anchorage. And so he came up and went to work for them in Anchorage. And so then when this outbreak of scarlet fever came along, they contacted the Railroad Hospital in Anchorage, and Dr. Albright and three nurses came up on the railroad, what they call a little speeder car, and they set up a temporary, took one of the temporary wooden buildings that we had, that the ARC had in camp in Palmer, and converted it into a temporary hospital. And and then he remained in the valley, and when they got the approval to build a new hospital, and there again, you know, I'm really amazed at how fast these buildings all went together. They got the approval in late June, early July, and Jerry Keeling, who was one of the original colonist family's daughter, was actually born in that hospital in November of 1935. And so Dr. Albright stayed on. He supervised building the hospital, was involved in laying it all, the hospital all out. They had a TB section in there. We had some TB amongst the natives. that was living in the area. And then he, when the war broke out, the army recruited him as the position, head position of all of Alaska military installations, and then he went on to become our first commissioner of health after the Second World War. And so he was very well respected and did a lot for our community. And
We've got some more callers I'd like to get to, including let's go next to Russ in Brookston, Minnesota. Russ, good morning. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a late listener, but I am an Alaska native, and I've been misplaced here for 20 years in northern Minnesota on the reservation. And the Matanuska Valley is one of the most amazing spots in America. And the fact that, you know, Alaska was purchased from the Russians all those many years ago, and America decided to realize that this was a land that was worthy of statehood, you know, that's a plus for America, because we could have easily been a territory of Russia.
Well, that would have made the colony kind of impossible if that had happened, so it's a good thing it didn't. But were you, Russ, I just wanted to ask you, because it says something on the screen about you being actually born in the Matanuska Valley. Is that true?
No, I was born in Kodiak, but I lived near the Matanuska Valley. And
okay.
You know, the land of the midnight sun. It's part of the reason the growing season is so long up there is because of the sunshine.
And well, they certainly get a lot of that in the short summer, and then of course you pay for it with a lot of darkness in the wintertime. I want to get another quick call in here, Russ. Thank you for joining us. Arnie in Madison has been waiting. Arnie, good morning.
Yes, hello, Joni. It's good to hear your friendly voice over the phone.
Would this be Arnie Allen?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Arnie.
Right, and I just wanted to encourage all of the listeners to try to see the documentary because it is such a compelling story. I thought it would be interesting for the listeners to know, too, a bit about what's happening in the valley today, and that it's becoming suburbanized since Anchorage is only some 40 or so miles away. And what are your recent impressions about any efforts to preserve parts of the landscape or some of the buildings, or is that all going to be gone in some years?
Well, you know, I'm so glad you asked that, because historic preservation has been part of the story of the film, and we've kind of gone hand in hand over these past number of years. We came along and discovered this story in 1994, just about the time that the local population was starting to make some serious efforts toward historic preservation. They had inherited a colony house that they then moved downtown to the historic square, the original site of the colony buildings, and have rehabilitated it into a colony house museum that is open to the public and is staffed lovingly by volunteers, many of whom are colony kids, that shows visitors how people lived during the colony era. And since then, a number of other buildings have been rehabilitated, and the whole central area is being preserved. Now, having said that, once the original colony families started reaching retirement age, which was, you know, in the 70s and 80s, coincided with the land boom that came with the pipeline. And suddenly the land became more valuable for subdivisions rather than for farming. And so, sadly, a lot of the farms are gone and are going even more quickly as Palmer became more of a bedroom community for Anchorage. So the agricultural feel of the area has been disappearing. When we first started shooting in 1994, there was one stoplight in town. Now I think they're up to four.
Holy smokes.
And we hardly recognize the place from one visit to the next. It's been growing so quickly. But I think, and partly due to our efforts to preserve their history, more and more people are aware of the need to try to preserve the very special agricultural feel of the area.
We're about out of time, and I wanted to be sure to be able to say thank you to both of you for a fascinating hour. Appreciate your being able to spend this time with us.
Thank you so
Wayne,
much,
and thank you, Joni.
You're welcome. Very pleased to be part of you.
The documentary is Alaska Far Away, The New Deal Pioneers of the Matanuska Colony. This program was produced by Rhonda Fanning. Thank you, Rhonda. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.